Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
National building trades wrap up their legislative conference in Washington, and Liz Shuler tells the crowd, it's time to secure a better future for workers. Meanwhile, machinists win big with Southwest Airlines. And today on the show, the iron workers fight in Illinois, and Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. Welcome to the Thursday, April 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a growing number of platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just remember to sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Vince DiDonato. Now, Vince comes to us from the Iron Workers Union. He's a district rep. He's going to talk about the nastiness going on in Morton, Illinois. Central Illinois-based manufacturer G&D Integrated Manufacturing LLC. They laid off workers represented by the Iron Workers Union at their Morton facility. Why? Well, it was in retaliation for organizing a union. Let me go back to September of last year when the iron workers at G&D marched on their boss to demand free and fair union recognition. However, the employer refused to recognize their union. They pushed forward, filed for a union election, and guess what? An overwhelming majority voted for the iron workers. That was October 13th when that happened. Well, the company didn't like that. Since the election, workers, along with their union representatives, have filed more than 100 and counting federal violations or unfair labor practices committed by the company against its workers, including direct threats of termination for organizing and forming a union, discrimination, surveillance, and interrogation. That's all illegal. That's all illegal. Now, when the company took drastic action in March, the workers and union reps were in the process of negotiating the first union contract. And the Iron Workers Union is calling on G&D Integrated Manufacturing to end its abuse of workers and return to negotiations in good faith. The iron workers were being berated, they say, by management on a daily basis, and they wanted to form a union to protect themselves against that abusive treatment. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is the Joy Silk Doctrine. Now, if you're a labor attorney listening to the show, you know anything about the National Labor Relations Board, we have touched on this with Joyce Goldstein a number of times. This is a policy that was actually reversed going back in 1971. And Vince is going to talk about the possibility that the National Labor Relations Board will bring that back to help out the iron workers in Morton, Illinois. We'll get into the specifics on that. But this is a fight. This is a fight with a really, really nasty company by the name of G&D Integrated Manufacturing. And Vince is a district rep for the iron workers. He's going to be our first guest. Sherrod Brown will be joining us later in the show, as he usually does here on America's Workforce. And he's got a lot on his plate today. He recently visited a Starbucks location in downtown Columbus to show support for the hourly workers who have petitioned to unionize. This is happening all over. At last report, there's close to 200 locations for Starbucks where the workers want to join a union. Well, last month, the hourly employees at the downtown store asked the NLRB for a union vote, and they also sent a letter to Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz, who came out of retirement, mind you, because of what's going on at his stores. And they stated that the decision Starbucks leadership made since the beginning of the pandemic has failed employees who were told to serve without regard for the safety of themselves and other customers. So we'll touch on that. We'll also talk about student loan debt. Senator Brown joined his colleagues in the Senate and the House in sending a letter to President Biden urging the administration to act now to extend the pause on federally held student loan payments at least till the end of the year. Now, Biden did act on this, but he didn't go to the end of the year. He went to the end of August. And there's a push by many to eliminate student loan debt altogether. That's a tall order. I'm sure Senator Brown has some comments on that. Teachers, you know, the average teacher spends anywhere between $500, $600, $700 a year on school supplies. Why? Because they don't have them in the classroom. So the teachers take it out of their own pockets. And right now, the teachers have a $250 tax deduction. If you save all the receipts, you can write that off on your taxes. Senator Brown wants to raise that to $1,000 because of inflation. Have you checked school supplies lately? Yeah, and that $250 has been around for a long, long time. Also, the Support Kids Not Red Tape Act. We're going to touch on that if we have time. That will extend USDA school meal flexibilities from the end of June, coming up in June, to September of 2023. And Senator Brown says these flexibilities have been crucial to feeding children throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. 90% of our schools, 90% still facing many challenges as they return to normal operations. So lots on his plate, and Senator Sherrod Brown will be our last guest on the show today. I want to talk about the building trades legislative conference, which wrapped up yesterday. In fact, President Biden spoke and got national attention. Sean McGarvey, the president, heavily pushed political contrast in his keynote address to the 3,000 plus delegates. His biggest selling point for Biden, the 5-year, $1.2 trillion Infrastructure and Jobs Act, which was approved last year and signed into law, which McGarvey says provides enormous opportunities for construction unions to train apprentices, provide well-paying jobs, and recruit new members. And he pointed out that the act was bipartisan. There was only one Republican at the conference, and that was Lisa Murkowski out of Alaska, who reminded delegates that, yeah, we got some Republican votes on this. I believe it was 19 in the Senate. She said there were some who said it would contribute to inflation. Some said it was the Green New Deal all over again, and others said, oh, no, you can't support it. You're a Republican. That's what she told the crowd. Well, McGarvey said Biden's achievements also included the rescue of the financially ailing multi-employer pension plans, which are common in the construction industry. That was huge. That was, what, $88 billion for the bailout. The other pitch, remember what Donald Trump did, what he did to workers, what he did to unions, and the U.S. Constitution. This is a quote from McGarvey. When certain news outlets minimize civil unrest, when false claims undermine the election outcome, when it became apparent to us and the rest of the world that our so-called leader could not accept defeat and the people had spoken and the votes were counted, and a serious coup attempt for the first time in our history began to be rolled out, you were not fooled. You were not fooled. And it didn't end on January 6th. You stood up for what's right. The building trades have always been in the political arena for well over 100 years. We know the process is sacred. We always do our part to ensure all casted ballots are counted, no matter the outcome. So, America remains a democracy. McGarvey also pulled no punches about Trump's anti-labor record without mentioning Trump. He addressed the 2017 Building Trades Conference in the same D.C. hotel ballroom. Trump pledged to enact infrastructure legislation. He said it then, but he didn't. McGarvey said Biden did. And construction and union members and families can claim the credits for the critical votes that elected Biden and Kamala Harris. McGarvey went on to say, let me make one thing clear. North America's building trades members and their families support democracy, full stop. Got a round of applause after that. One more thing from Sean McGarvey. He pointed out that the former administration tried to cripple Davis-Bacon, which is a law going back 90-plus years dealing with the prevailing wage. As he put it, they tried to also kneecap registered union apprenticeships. They had the most anti-union NLRB general counsel, the board's top enforcement officer and staffer in history, and they tried to devastate our ability to achieve project labor agreements on federally funded construction and to upend collective bargaining in the construction industry. So Sean McGarvey was on a roll. There's no doubt about that. The other person that spoke at the Building Trades Conference, no surprise here, was Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO. And she said, I can tell you the labor movement is ready to seize the opportunities ahead of us to secure a better future for working people. She talked about the infrastructure law and how it's helped us create millions of good jobs fixing roads and bridges. She went on to say, we need to shape this investment for generations to come and make sure that the strong labor standards we have attached to the bill are used to ensure the money is spent in ways that benefit working people. No one, said Liz, no one is better at training a diverse workforce than the labor movement. We have unlimited potential to recruit and train a workforce who will expand the voices of working people and provide workers with the skills needed for the jobs of tomorrow. Liz Shuler at the Building Trades Conference this week. And again, that wrapped up yesterday in Washington. And one more here before we break. Approximately 7,000 union members at Southwest Airlines will vote on a contract that delivers industry-leading job protections and pay scales, as well as improved mandatory overtime rules. The Machinists represent Southwest Airlines customer service employees, and its negotiating committee unanimously recommended a yes vote for the agreement. Members will decide whether to ratify the four-year tentative agreement in the next several weeks. Comment here from Rich Johnson, who's the Machinist Chief of Staff to the International President. Our members should be proud to have stood strong for a contract that they deserve. Thanks to this negotiating committee and the solidarity of our membership, we were able to secure a much stronger tentative agreement that will benefit our members at Southwest, their families, as well as the communities involved. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the iron workers struggle in Illinois.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Morton, Illinois right now. Morton is just outside Peoria, Illinois. And joining us on our live line is Vince DiDonato. He's a district rep for the Iron Workers Union. And as I indicated a few minutes ago, they have a struggle, especially with one company, G&D Integrated Manufacturing. The workers want to unionize, and this company just does not want to hear it. Vince DiDonato, did I pronounce your name correctly, sir?
Yes, sir, you did. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Before we get into the story, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, how long, district rep, what you cover, your time as an iron worker, why you got involved in the Iron Workers Union. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so back in 1998, I started working summers. My family's all iron workers, from my grandpa, uncle, cousins. And so I started iron working back in the summers of 98. Worked my way up, held some offices at the local here in Peoria, Illinois, and started working for the International roughly 8 years ago in the organizing department. And just kind of worked my way up to district rep. And work for the organizing department. And I handle a lot of areas on the East Coast, Southeast States District Council, Ohio and vicinity, Great Lakes District Council, Mid-Atlantic, to name a few, and yeah. Philadelphia, Jersey area, and just help organize.
So you got a pretty broad territory there. You probably know a lot of the same people that I know, because I've been doing the show. We record the show Monday through Friday at Iron Workers Local 17 with business manager Rich Jordan and the crew. They have about 1,000 members. So you're pretty familiar with this territory then, I take it.
Yes, sir. Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting better every day.
Yeah, hardworking guys. I'll tell you, they come to the table prepared, no doubt about that. The apprenticeship program is great too. So let's talk about this G&D Integrated. What the heck is going on here, Vince? This is crazy. I mean, they want a union. The company said no way. Is that pretty much the gist of it?
Oh, I mean, the company just didn't say no way. I mean, they showed their actions, and it said more than no way. So the workers of G&D reached out to the iron workers back in August of this year. And, you know, they were upset over a lot of different issues. Safety was a big one. Some of the ways they were being treated, they felt like they were being disrespected by the boss. Everything they would address with the boss would fall on deaf ears. They tried going to HR. They tried going to the plant manager. They tried going to the owner, and they all refused to meet except for HR. And HR lied to them. They said, hey, everything you say in this room will stay in this room. There won't be any problems, no retaliation, no repercussions. And so the workers filed some complaints against their boss. And they weren't out of the office an hour or two, and here come the boss. You know, and he started hollering and screaming. So, you know, nothing's a secret, right?
Yeah.
They were finally fed up. And they'd had enough, and they were already acting as a union, doing what they were doing. They were going in 2, 3, 4 at a time. And so they called us.
Vince, how many workers are we talking about at G&D Integrated?
At the time, it was 18 to 20. It would fluctuate here and there, but in August, it was 18 to 20 workers. We are currently down to 2 working in the shop.
Well, wait a minute. How are they getting anything done if they have only 2 workers right now?
Well, you know, that's where G&D claims that they've lost most of the work that they do for Komatsu, and that they've lost all other contracts that they do for anybody else. So they claim they're just doing a little bit of wrap-up work and that they're getting ready to close down and walk away.
Oh, no. So where do we stand right now? Is this before the NLRB or what?
So we've got roughly well over 125 unfair labor practices filed against G&D. Mm-hmm. We're going to pursue them. We're looking at 10J injunctions. So we're going to pursue this. We are still bargaining. We do have a date set up in the next couple weeks. You know, bargaining's been extremely slow to non-existent. We've had a lot of hiccups through the days, and we're just going to keep fighting. We're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep going and keep fighting for these members.
And how's the morale right now? I mean, this has been going on for quite some time. I'm looking at your news release. It was September 7th of last year when they marched on their boss to demand a free and fair union election. And since then, it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. So how are they holding up?
You know, that's an excellent question. Like you would expect, there's good days and bad days, right? I mean, there was over half of the bargaining unit was tapped on the shoulder on March 1st at about 1:30 in the afternoon and told, basically, get your stuff, get out, don't ever come back. I mean, they were in the middle of welding work, and they didn't even turn welding machines off. They didn't unhook pieces off of the crane and basically marched out. So the workers are extremely upset. They're, you know, we're looking for jobs. We're trying to get everything back on track. But at the same time, these workers aren't faltering. They now have seen not only the true colors of G&D, but what other workers are going through in this country. I'm going to tell you what, they're not backing down. They're a strong group of guys. And so, like I said, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster of emotions with these guys for losing their jobs, you know, retaliatory layoffs. But they're not backing down. They're going to keep fighting.
What about National? Is National helping in on helping these helping your crusade out over here?
So the board, we've gotten word that they are looking at some things. Sometimes they're tight-lipped. They don't always tell you what they're working on or what they're looking at. And even then, I mean, they can be looking at a lot of things. It doesn't mean it's going to come through or happen, but I do believe that this really has got the attention of the board in D.C. I do deep down think that they're going to eventually come through. So we are getting some help. We are getting some assistance. And, you know, time will tell on that. Court system's not always the fastest in the country.
No, it takes a while. You mentioned 125 unfair labor practice charges. Have any of those charges been heard yet by the NLRB?
No, I'm going to be honest with you. I think they're scrambling. You know, we filed over 125 since September 7th. I think the board's a little overwhelmed. You know, and the board's always been under budget and understaffed, so they're overworked.
Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
None of them have been heard yet.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, too, because a couple of weeks ago, there was a story that, to your point, that they were understaffed, they need more money. And, in fact, our next guest on the show, Sherrod Brown, is pushing for more money to go to the National Labor Relations Board because of what we're talking about right now. This is a perfect example of that. Vince, I want to talk to you about this G&D company, G&D Integrated. Mm-hmm. What's their history? I mean, how long have they been around? I mean, do they have a history of mistreating workers over the years? What do we know about that?
So they've been around quite a while. They are mainly a logistics, trucking, and warehouse company, and they opened a fabrication shop to start fabricating parts and decks and tanks for Komatsu, which makes mining vehicles and mining trucks. And they started the fabrication shop roughly 16 years ago, and they've built it up to what it is now. And so they've got roughly 500 to 1,000 employees under the umbrella of Arbor LLC. The Teamsters have tried to organize up by Chicago, I believe it was two or three times. They had, you know, obviously majority every time they tried, and they never were able to succeed. One of G&D's big tactics are they bring in union busters. They did it right on this one. They brought in two union busters from, you know, roughly September 7th to the election. And after these workers, you know, voted at the ballot box and showed everybody they weren't backing down, they hired a third union buster. So you know, I don't know that they've had a history of abusing or exploiting workers like they are today, but they've obviously had an anti-union past.
So the iron workers would be the first union once they get their way. Is that
yes,
the case? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, those union busters are something else. We were just talking the other day about Amazon and that union. I don't know if you follow that story out of Staten Island, New York, where the the union, which was independent of the AFL-CIO, and they did a grassroots campaign where they got their phones, and today, you know, nothing's safe with a phone. They took pictures of the union busters and posted them all over Twitter. And they said, hey, stay away from this guy. And there's another funny story about that, and you would appreciate this as a guy. One of the union busters was a good-looking girl. They hired a really good-looking girl, and it's mostly guys in the warehouse, right?
Yeah.
So they're all, like, making their moves on her, and then... And then when they found out she was a union buster, they said, we're staying away from you. We don't want to even be near you. But I'll tell you,
right. Yeah,
companies will do anything to try to, you know, to thwart the union. That's a good example right there. Vince, this is a great conversation. Can you stay with us? I want to get into the Joy Silk Doctrine because I saw that in your press release, and I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty. This is something that goes back into NLRB law. But if you can hang with us, I appreciate that. Vince DiDonato, he's a district rep for the iron workers out of Illinois. We're talking about G&D Integrated Manufacturing, a company that does not like the union. Over 125 unfair labor practice charges. Later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And keep in mind, we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. And I always say good employment. They find the good jobs with the good wages and benefits. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to Illinois. Joining us on our live line today is Mr. Vince DiDonato. He's a district rep with the Iron Workers, been with the Iron Workers Union since the late 90s. We're talking about this company in central Illinois. They're just outside Peoria. Morton, Illinois is the town. G&D Integrated Manufacturing, LLC. Anti-union company. They've got, various times anywhere between 500 and 1,000 employees. The ironworkers would be the first union, and they don't want any part of it since the ironworkers voted for the union, which was back in September. There has been 125-plus federal violations or unfair labor practices, and none of them have been heard because of the load at the labor board office. Vince, I want to talk about this Joy Silk Doctrine, and I understand that the ironworkers is trying to reinstate this policy, Joy Silk, and apparently this was very popular, and then it was reversed back in 1971. Can you give me some details on it? How would that change things? Maybe you can let our listeners know what's at stake here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason Joy Silk was popular is because it worked. It helped workers. Corporations didn't like it, and that's why we're in the seat we are today. They fought it. They're going to continue to fight it. But Joy Silk basically states that if a majority of your workforce can prove to the boss, beyond a reasonable doubt, that they want a union, that the boss or the owner should recognize that union right then and there. And if they fail to recognize when the workforce shows beyond a doubt that there is the majority of that workforce wants a union, they have to recognize. If they do not, the union can file a bad faith bargaining charge. When that case is heard, if the union wins that charge, then the company will then be forced to recognize and start negotiations. A lot of what this boils down to, I'm going to use G&D for example. If 80, 85, 90% of your workforce signs a petition, marches on you, and you can actually see that that number of your workforce, 80 to 90, 100%, are standing there telling you to your face, we want a union. Why should the government have to spend their time when they already don't have enough money for their budget? They're already overworked. They're already dealing with all this. Why should these workers have to wait a month or two and go to a union election? And in that period of time, allow that employer to hire union busters to come in, you know, put fear in the workers, intimidate, threat, and everything else, and try and break these workers and put them through hell. It is their legal right to stand up in this country, form or join a union. So Joy Silk gives the power back to the workers.
Yeah.
If they, you know, and that's the biggest thing. Where it could have helped us with G&D is when the workers marched in on September 7th, they wouldn't have had to wait until October 13th to have an election. The employer wouldn't have spent $3,000 a day plus expenses on each union buster to come in and hold meetings. You know, the company comes at us in negotiations and they want to talk about productivity and things not getting done and parts not getting done. How many captive audience meetings did they hold with these workers and union busters? How many times did they shut down production to tell these workers how bad a union is for them, as the union buster in the room is working under a negotiated contract with that employer to come in and tell the workers they don't need one? So Joy Silk can eliminate a lot of these hassles. And, you know, if the employer's not playing ball right out of the gate, starts committing unfair labor practices, the board will step in a lot earlier with a 10J injunction, and they will force that employer to the table with the workers.
So, Vince, I take it your union, the ironworkers, have formally asked the NLRB to reinstate Joy Silk. Has that process already been handled?
So, Council Abruzzo, on I believe it was like August 28th when she took over, she said that she was looking for a case to use to try and bring Joy Silk back and use that example. And I mean, it was kind of like perfect timing. You know, as iron workers, we just don't represent G&D or, you know, a group of 20 workers. We fight for all the workers in the country, you know.
Sure.
And we see the need in this country for that, not only with Starbucks and Amazon, but in the construction industry. We see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We see how it would actually help the board. Because, again, if you look at just the last year and a half, how many workers have stood up, how many elections are being filed, the board can't keep up as it is. Joyce Silk would actually, I think, help the board because you wouldn't have to go to an election every single time. You know, yeah. It'd save time, money, and energy. So, you know, as an international, we sat down, we looked, it was perfect timing with G&D. And these workers were as strong as you could ever get them. And they said, hey, absolutely, we'll sign that petition. We're going to march on the boss. The only thing they were upset about is that they actually couldn't do it on Labor Day. They had to wait till the day after.
How about that?
So, you know, the morning after Labor Day, they marched in and they told the boss that they wanted the iron workers to represent them. They read a letter to them. And, I mean, that took guts.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots of guts.
Yeah, so we asked the board to use that case to try and bring Joyce Silk back. Hopefully it's getting considered. We've also heard rumors there's a couple other trades that are doing the same thing. And, you know, us as iron workers, or at least my opinion, I don't care whose case they use. Just get Joyce Silk back for these workers.
There you go. Yeah,
let's organize.
Yeah. It's hard to believe it's, what, over 51 years since that policy was reversed. Now, let me ask you this. When you say a majority of workers, is it a simple majority? You said like 80, 90%. If 80, 90, 95% of the workers want the union, therefore it needs to be done. Now, under Joy Silk, could it be like 51%, 52%? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so as long as you've got a majority of your workforce, and that can be 51%, and you prove without a doubt to that employer that you have that, they must recognize. The reason I bring up 80 to 90% is because that falls where G&D was. When you've got 80 to 90% of your workforce standing in front of you before work with letters in hand, you can't deny that.
Right.
And so in a situation like that, let's say you've got an employer that has 100, 200, 300 employees. They can't deny when there's 80 or 90% of that workforce march on them. Now, there are other ways to prove it. We had these guys sign petitions, you know, to demand recognition. But we want to make it very, very clear that when these workers walk in the room, there is absolutely zero question by that employer that there's a majority there. That's why I use the 80 to 90%. But yes, 51% can invoke Joy Silk.
We'll see what happens here from the general counsel. Again, that would be Jennifer Abruzzo. Vince was talking about Abruzzo on the show, and that's the top cop over there at the NLRB. And she has the power to say, you know what? Maybe we should reinstate this, and that would be a game changer for not just the iron workers, but as you pointed out, many, many unions. So it is a new day at the NLRB. We're lucky to have her and the staff that they have right now, because it's important that workers be treated like human beings when it comes down to it. You know, Vince, I'm thinking here, do you realize how many people would be in a union today if we didn't have to deal with all these union busters and this animosity? This is a perfect example of what you're talking about here, this G&D, and how much time they spent, captive audience meetings, the union busters getting paid $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a day. Now, if they would let workers alone and let them decide if they want a union, they should have. Do you realize how much union density would increase in the country today?
Oh, it'd be a different world. It really would. The amount of people that have lost their elections because of the union busters coming in, I don't have those figures in front of me, but it's astronomical. I mean, union busting is a $1 billion a year business. And when you break down the numbers and you start looking at these workers, these union busters are making $3,000 a day and expenses not to exceed $10,000 a month. You start breaking them numbers down when you look at a workforce of 20 and there's two union busters in the room. These guys weren't even asking for money to begin with, right? Money was not their main objective or issue. It was really treatment and safety. And if the employer would have actually sat down with these workers at G&D and listened to them, they probably might not even have called us. But yes.
Yeah.
So that gets to the point of if these workers were able to stand up and follow the law like they do and not have an employer break the law and cheat, it would be a different outcome right now.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I've heard a number of 60 million people would join a union like today if there weren't so many roadblocks. 60 million, that would be a huge game changer in America. Vince, I want to throw this statistic at you, and I've said this many, many times on the show. There's about 60 million people in the country today that would join a union if there weren't so many darn roadblocks in joining a union. That's comes from the AFL-CIO. They've done a number of studies on this, so it's amazing. One more question here before we go, and you did a great job today explaining what's going on at G&D Integrated Manufacturing. Now, eventually, we're hoping and praying that everything's going to work out and they're going to be able to unionize over there, and I think it's going to happen. What local would they be joining? Do we have any information on that?
So they will join Local 853. It is based out of Chicago. It covers a big territory, but it'd be Local 853. And I got to say thank you to the members of Local 112. They supported these workers. They're right there in East Peoria, a few miles away. They attended rallies. They supported the workers. They came out. We've used their hall for some meetings. So, yes, they will join Local 853.
All right. Real good. Vince, you take care. Please keep in touch. You got a friend here with America's Workforce, Iron Workers, national sponsor. So anything that we can do, keep us posted, okay?
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Senator Sherrod Brown, we're in a holding pattern here. I just want to do a shout out for the coal miners. Yesterday, they had the big rally in Alabama. 372 days now for that strike at Warrior Met. Well, this story comes out of West Virginia, where the mine workers president, Cecil Roberts, rejected the idea that West Virginia needs, get this, less safety enforcement in the coal mining industry, calling a proposal to cut mine safety regulation outrageous. What the heck is going on here? It's House Bill 4840. It would eliminate the ability of the West Virginia Office of Miners, Health, Safety, and Training to enforce the state's mining safety laws. Roberts said, I cannot understand why any responsible lawmaker would believe the outright elimination of an entire state agency's enforcement power would keep miners safer at work. Last year, West Virginia alone accounted for 50% of all coal mine fatalities in America. We received a call that a miner, this was just last week in southern West Virginia, with 20 years of experience, who died in a mining accident. Cecil said the first agency on the scene was not MSHA, it was the state. MSHA is the Mine Safety Health Administration. Cecil wrapped up saying the state inspectors arrived on site almost an hour before MSHA was able to get there. So, to say we need less protection from the state, less safety, and less enforcement in the coal mining industry makes zero sense. Again, House Bill 4840 in the state of West Virginia, eliminating the ability of the Office of Miners, Health, Safety, and Training. Unbelievable. All right, let's go to line number two right now. Welcome one of our regulars. That would be Senator Sherrod Brown. Senator Brown, welcome back to America's Workforce. And first and foremost, I want to thank you for supporting our brothers and sisters in the Steelworkers Union who are locked out at the Sherwin-Williams facility. They're on the picket line, and I know you showed up there last week in support of them. So thank you very much. It's so sad with a company of that caliber has to take on workers like that. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's the first strike that they've called, I think, that they've ever called at that plant. And, you know, my mother-in-law, as you know, my father-in-law was a utility worker for 37 years in Ashtabula, and he always, they struck twice when my wife was growing up, and she says they never really recover what they lose during a strike. So workers only strike when their backs are against the wall, and they are here. And I've talked to the company. I spent some time with the CEO and the legal counsel. I walked the picket line. I want to see them come to agreement. Nobody wins on these, and these workers are, their backs are against the wall, and they need help. They're working. They've been essential workers during this strike. They don't feel like they've been during pandemic. They don't feel like they've been essential workers. They've not been treated that way in their minds. And you're seeing now, Flash, and I know your show is showing this, that there is more excitement about unions than there's been, I think, any time in our lifetime. I was at a Starbucks, a couple of places in the state working with them. This, what's happening in Alabama, what happened in New York with Amazon. I mean, there is great interest in unionization now. The laws are biased against labor again, and we're trying to fix it, but every Republican's blocking us from doing it, and we're going to keep fighting.
It would be nice to have that PRO Act in place, and that would change the whole dynamics when it comes to organizing. Yeah, thank you for your support on Sherwin-Williams workers, the Starbucks campaign, Amazon workers. Let's switch over to student loan debt here. Now, I know Biden extended it to, I believe, the end of August. I know you were pushing to the end of the year, and there's some are saying that maybe we should dump it all together. Where do you stand on this issue? Should it all go away or what?
Well, I don't think it's all going to go away, but we need to continue at least as much as we're doing. I mean, there are many people out there that struggled and paid their debts, and they're going to look at, well, why them, not me? But I also think that student debt is just oppressing this generation. It means that far too many kids, they're not finding, I mean, it's to me, it's all about we got to get wages higher because people can't pay back these debts. They then can't. Some people put off marriage as a result. Other people can't buy a house and start that kind of clock running where you can begin to build equity and into a middle class lifestyle. So this is all part of that. And it's partly wages. It's partly unionization. It's partly forgiving large chunks of this debt. I think Biden's done it mostly right. He has the authority to do a little bit more, and we need to figure out how to do that.
Let's talk about teachers here, and I know you made some news yesterday and today regarding the tax deduction, and I'll tell you, I've got a number of teachers in my family, and I know this full-heartedly, how much they, well, number one, how much they work and where the pay level is and what they have to do as far as buying supplies, because the schools, a lot of the kids, they come to school unprepared, and as a result, the teachers, you know, they fill in what's needed. And right now, what is it? It's $250 tax deduction they have, and you want to increase it to what?
Yeah, we want to quadruple it. Yeah, it hasn't been raised in years, and it's a good thing, but it's not enough of a good thing. I was with Jill Wagner yesterday, a teacher from Independence, grew up in Garfield, and she's taught for 30 years at in Brunswick Middle School, either Willits or Edwards, I forget which one she said. She's taught all over. And she was talking about, she has 17 educators in her family, so she's definitely a teaching family. And just how many of them and her friends reach into their pockets and buy all kinds of school supplies. And you know, even in more affluent districts, but certainly in middle class and in low income districts, but everywhere. And they're only allowed to deduct $250 of the money they spend. And the average teacher spends like $1,000 out of her own pocket or his own pocket. And so we just need to raise that tax deduction. I introduced the bill. We're going to get it, try to make it part of a larger tax package as it goes through the legislative process. I'm hopeful. It's not certain. It's not going to happen by tomorrow. But it's just one little thing we can do to say to teachers, we appreciate you, because we don't show that appreciation nearly often enough.
No, not at all. One more issue here, and that's the Support Kids Not Red Tape Act. And apparently there's a lot of kids, and we're talking about school lunches, school meals, a lot of kids going hungry. This would change things, I take it?
Yeah, it would give kids that just we know that the school year, when the school year ends, it doesn't mean that kids, I mean, I'll put it this way, kids, many, many children in Ohio, their best time, their best meals are Monday through Friday during the school year, not weekends, not holidays, not summer vacations. And we need to be more aware of that. I think the pandemic really taught us that. And we need to do better.
Very good. All right, Senator, you take care. Keep up the fight. We appreciate everything that you do for workers in America, union and non-union. I want to get that point across. So you take care. Keep up the fight. And we'll
talk
to you next
time. Always, and you too, for what you do. See you, buddy.
The Senator had a run here. We got about 2 minutes left on the show. I just want to point out something from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. In fact, we're going to have Scott Paul on the show next Wednesday, I believe. And I've talked about this on the show. It's the Bipartisan Innovation Act. And Scott writes, 11 years ago, supply chains all over the world were disrupted by a nuclear disaster in Fukushima, Japan. Those same supply chains broke in 2020 when COVID-19, the pandemic, disrupted economic activity everywhere. They broke again in 2021, leading to shortages of everything from semiconductors to furniture and more. And now the Russian invasion of Ukraine is further disrupting them. The United States remains woefully dependent on foreign imports, and that's putting our own security at risk. But there is something Congress can do and do right now to help fix things. It's called the Bipartisan Innovation Act, and it would strengthen our critical industries by investing in reshoring supply chains and boosting U.S. production for things like semiconductors. Scott writes that similar bills have passed both the House and Senate, and now lawmakers need to get the final bill over the finish line, one that includes tough trade enforcement tools to guard against global trade cheats and protect jobs here at home. So if you want to join the crusade there, just go to AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org, and urge your members of Congress to do the right thing. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Teachers Union in Mississippi, and labor attorney Joyce Goldstein. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.